It's time, Fort Wayne. Your sports, your station. It's the Sports Rush with Brett Rump.
Three ball, Max Landis.
Covering all the topics that hit a nerve here in the Summit City.
Clark, 11-yard touchdown.
Only on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Now, here's your host, Brett Rump.
The greatest, most interesting, most important person of all time.
You are incredible.
Over the point.
Well, you're half right.
What is this, amateur hour?
This is
going to
be huge.
I believe this is going to be our final
sound. Just when I think you said the stupidest thing ever, you keep talking.
I think that's the worst thing I've ever heard.
That boy ain't right.
The simplest way to put it, I have problems.
Welcome to the alleged show.
Y'all ready for this?
Thank God it's...
I cannot believe that it is already Friday. We're heading into a sports weekend. The work week has just flown by. It also means it's the end of spring break for so many of you. Get back to school. Get back to work. Got sales reps out there looking for you. Like me. Welcome to the Sports Rush, your daily local sports fix, 4 to 6. I am Brett Rump, along with Adam Lundy, and we've got you connected on the Parkview Sports Medicine text line at 46862. Another big Friday edition to get you into this sports weekend. Mike Nutter, TinCast president, he'll join us coming up later in the hour. We also have Greg Rakestraw, the play-by-play voice of the IHSAA Champions Network with ISC Sports Network. A lot of things to talk to Rake about, and we'll talk to him coming up at 5:20 today. Of course, as we said, we always love to hear from you. Any questions, comments, or suggestions, 46862 on the Parkview Sports Medicine text line. All right, here it is, Final Four weekend.
Oh, man. We made it.
Boilermakers and North Carolina State.
The Wolfpack.
UConn will take on... Why did I just forget?
Alabama.
Alabama.
Roll Tide.
Why did I forget?
Because you're not Rolling Tide.
No, I'm not. I'm talking all Purdue, North Carolina State, man. I'm just giving that game to UConn. I don't even, it's like Alabama?
Anybody?
Who's going to be the sacrificial lamb in that game? Boilermakers, North Carolina State coming up tomorrow, and you kind of feel like, hey, maybe you can get a big sigh of relief and maybe this whole but can go away. And when I say but, I don't mean anatomy. I mean B-U-T, but. The narrative about the Purdue Boilermakers last couple of years, what's it been?
Yeah, Painter's a good coach, but
the Purdue, Boilermakers are having a great season,
but...
Yeah, we've heard it for 2 years now. It's been like this cloud over the Boilermakers program, and hopefully now what the Boilermakers have been able to do, Matt Painter has been able to do in leading this group to what I feel probably was their potential. I mean, last year, I think they fell short of their potential. This year, I think they're, making the Final Four. I think they should make the championship game, and I think whatever happens in the championship game, it's... The Purdue Boilermakers did not fall short. They were one of the top three teams all year long in college basketball. They're one of the four teams still remaining, and they've got a good chance, I think, to beat North Carolina State and be one of the remaining two standing. And if they get into the final two and it's them and UConn, they could beat by UConn. I don't think there's shame in that. UConn's got an outstanding team. And, of course, that would be a game we would talk about on Monday. But today it's... about Purdue and North Carolina State. But that big butt needs to go away.
Well, you're still in here.
Oh, no, you didn't go there. Ouch. Man, oh, man, happy hour must have started early for Adam Lundy.
Oh, man,
you work on the morning show one day, and Mr. Cocky shows up in the afternoon. Oh, boy.
No, you set me up for that one.
I guess. I didn't even think about what I was saying, but okay, fine. Good one. I'll give you credit for that because, if there's anything we do here, it's that we're self-deprecating.
Oh, yeah.
We understand our faults and our weaknesses and we aren't afraid to call them out, like me forgetting who the fourth team was in the Final Four, okay? That's just an idiot move. And I started the show right off, you know, coming in strong.
Oh, man, all our Crimson Tide fans are just rioting.
Who's UConn? Well, yeah, they're playing a football school. Alabama's not supposed to be there. So who remembers that Alabama is not, you know, Alabama is one of those tweeners. They're not one of the power programs, you know, the teams that we've talked about all year long about being a true Final Four contender. But they're also not a Cinderella story.
No.
They're too good to be considered a Cinderella. So they're a tweener. So we just almost forget their existence. So anyway.
It's just a whole thing, you know, with the Crimson Tide making it. Sometimes it's one of these teams where it's not an illustrious team per se, but it's one that is a good team from a power conference that makes it through.
But the Buds do have to go away. I mean, I started to look at this and I thought, you know, they built this reputation on just one or two bad losses. And yeah, it's no fun getting beat by a 15 seed or getting beat by a 16 seed. But, you know, a couple of things you have to remember. Number one, getting beat by the 15 seed did not happen in the first round.
Right.
You know, so it's not like Purdue showed up, got an early exit, went home, never claimed a victory in the NCAA tournament. In fact, if you kind of go through and look, everybody wants to talk about that 116 loss to Fairleigh Dickinson. But under Matt Painter, they've had 14 NCAA tournament appearances. 13 times they've gotten wins in the first round. 7 times they've made it through the Sweet 16. They've got 2 Elite Eights. And 1 Final Four. And that's, of course, this year. But there's a lot of teams in the country that would gladly trade that kind of success. Again, out of 14 tournament appearances, 13 times you've made it past the first round. The only time you didn't was that 116 upset.
And then you get stuck with the Bucks.
And then you get a reputation because of it. Yeah.
Absolutely.
All of a sudden it becomes, well, you know, I think, you know, they're having a great year, but let's wait till March. Let's see what they do in the tournament.
We've seen what happens with Purdue.
One time. You know, it's like Tom Izzo built a reputation of being such a great March coach. And yet, you know, yeah, they've won a couple of NCAA tournaments, but they've had a number of failures, too.
Absolutely.
You know, in fact, I looked at some of the other teams to kind of compare what other teams have done. And when we talk about Tom Izzo at Michigan State, a team that and a coach that has a reputation of always coming around in March.
Yeah, absolutely.
Never count Tom Izzo out. Just give him a chance and see what he can do with March. Well, they've only made it to the second weekend 2 times the last 8 appearances in the NCAA tournament. But by gosh, he's a great coach in March.
Yeah, there's no buts for Izzo.
Yeah, I know. And it's strange because the facts don't necessarily back up. I mean, Michigan State always has a good program. So I think, you know, you'd expect them to have success getting through the first weekend. But only twice in the last 8 appearances in the NCAA tournament have they made it through the first 2 rounds.
Crazy.
How about Kansas?
Yeah.
You know, one of the blue bloods. I think it's fair to call them a blue blood.
Absolutely.
They've got 4 second round losses in their last 5 tournament appearances.
Mm.
So I think next year when we watch Kansas, if they're doing well, we have to say, hey, hold on. They're doing fine now, but.
You remember when Bill Self said last season he was too focused on the transfer portal and lost in the second round? And
yeah, well, apparently he's been looking at that transfer portal for 5 years now because 4 of them he didn't make it out of the second round. Or Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
Another one of the so-called blue bloods. Last time they made it past the second round, which means basically getting through the first weekend, was 2019, 5 years ago. Now, that's a team you would expect annually they're going to be at least through the first weekend.
Well, we saw what happened this year. That's for darn sure.
You didn't make it past the first game. The Oakland Golden Grizzlies, Kentucky got gulkied.
Get gulkied.
Yeah, they got gulkied. So Kentucky was done early. But, you know, I think we can go ahead and safely put away the buts with Matt Painter. I mean, it's not – it. You know, it's a one and done time of year. And, you know, every team is going to have four or five losses. We just aren't. I don't know if we will ever see on the men's side, if we will ever see another Indiana team, 1976 Indiana team.
That goes
unbeaten.
That's a very high standard.
You know, and that's and we came close a couple of years ago.
Yep.
But I just don't know if we're ever going to see it. Now, on the women's side, South Carolina is trying to pull it off this weekend.
Sure are.
They go into the Final Four with an undefeated record. Who do they play?
NC State.
Oh, that's right, because NC State's making it on both sides.
Yes, they are.
How about UConn and NC State both getting women's and men's basketball into the respective Final Fours?
Very impressive. Very, very impressive.
And then, of course, the big game, the one, again, that I'm focused on, UConn, Iowa, coming up tonight.
Right. And you wanted to do a Twitter poll.
Oh, yeah. You know, I look at this game and it's like, okay, UConn is playing really good basketball right now. Paige Beckers is their star. She's lighting it up and she probably will need to light it up big time if UConn's going to get the win over Iowa. But when you look at this game, I mean, I don't think UConn's going to beat Iowa, but it's Gino Auriemma. It's a great tradition. They've got a superstar leader just like Iowa does. And I can't completely count them out, but I do believe Iowa is a better basketball team. But we will put this out on a Twitter poll because I want to see where your mind is. Because I think for UConn to beat Iowa, first thing that has to happen is Paige Beckers has to neutralize the scoring of Caitlin Clark. And so Paige Beckers has to score as much or more than Caitlin Clark. And so I'm wondering if we gave you four options. And that would be Iowa wins and Caitlin Clark outscores Paige Beckers. The second option, Iowa wins, but Paige Beckers outscores Caitlin Clark. Third option is you're going to go with UConn to get the win over Iowa, but Caitlin Clark will still have more points than Paige Beckers. And then the fourth option will be that UConn wins and Paige Beckers outscores Caitlin Clark. Who's going to be the top scorer? Who's going to win the game? Put that combo together and then place your vote on our Twitter poll that we've got posted. Have we got it posted now?
I just posted it.
Just posted it, and yep. It's available at 1380 The Fan.
You got it.
There you go. So you can go ahead and place your vote for what you think is going to happen. First of all, both defenses are going to key on stopping the other superstar. I just don't know who's better equipped. Because here's the thing about Caitlin Clark. If you run two at her all night long, she's going to end up with 16 or 17 assists. But she might not score as much as Paige Beckers. And Iowa, I don't know that Beckers is quite the passer, but she is, I think, a player that's got the full skill set. I think it's going to be a terrific matchup because you got star power, you got two good basketball teams, you got a legendary coach in Gino Auriemma. Somebody asked us yesterday on the text line if the girl from Homestead is playing for UConn. And Ariana Patterson is at UConn. She is out for the season with an injury. So she is there. You won't see her on the court tonight. But she was not only at Homestead, but was Miss Basketball in the state of Indiana as well. But who's going to win and who's going to outscore the other? Because it's not only a great individual matchup, it's a really fun team matchup because you've got UConn that is really outperforming expectations. They came in as a 3 seed. They've got a shorthanded lineup. They can only play about 6 players. 7 on the best of days, and yet here they are
just well coached and well rounded team. I would say that's a good way to put it.
You know where the women's Final Four is being held, by the way?
I know it's in Ohio. I just don't know which city.
It's in Cleveland. Yeah, my favorite city in Ohio.
Hey, watch out.
No. I know, I can't say anything.
Don't talk bad about Cleveland.
I'll get about 3 texts, Bill. Fire away as soon as I say something about Cleveland. Apparently, we've got an audience in Cleveland.
Ready to defend.
Then they do. They jump in and defend their city.
But yeah, go ahead and vote
There's
on that.
There's a lot to defend there.
Lot to defend. Go ahead and vote on that poll at 1380 The Fan. Taking a look at the text line here, Brett, 46862. Somebody said, It's hard to bet against Caitlin Clark. She seems to shine even brighter when the stakes are higher. I expect her to go for 40-plus tonight.
You know what? What has she done it three times so far in this tournament? Gone 40-plus. She had 41 last time out against LSU. She did it against LSU. I don't know why she can't do it against UConn. But, you know, and the women don't play in a stadium, like a dome stadium. Because I think that's going to be something to factor in to the men's game. And we'll talk about this a little bit later in the show.
Mm.
But the fact that the men are going to be playing in the biggest building they've played in all year long, which gives you a whole different depth perception.
Yeah, sidelines.
When you shoot. And so I think three-point shooting could be a factor in this game. When we talked to Raphael Davis, he was talking about DJ Horn and his ability to light it up from outside. I think it's going to be a factor for both teams because I think Purdue needs to be able to hit their shots. Are you going to find lower three-point percentages in this Final Four because just the massive size of the facility? And this is not one of those where they've tucked the court into a corner. No, this is actually at the 50-yard line, there's a court.
Yeah.
And some of those seats, you aren't going to be able to see much of what's going on.
Absolutely.
But they'll be there.
They'll be there. And
their bank account will feel it.
Absolutely, they'll feel it.
But, you know, Purdue fans, I've talked to a couple that are they're out there.
Oh, yeah.
And they said, 44 years, not going to miss it.
Worth it. Yeah. Worth it. A couple more texts here. Somebody said, go Iowa women's team. Go Purdue Big Ten all the way. That's from Truck and Phil.
It's good to have Truck and Phil on our side this beautiful Friday.
Shout out to you, Truck and Phil. Somebody else said, how did Samson win Coach of the Year over Painter?
Yeah, the annual awards were announced today, and as expected, I mean, almost a no-brainer. Zach Edey, back-to-back AP Player of the Year.
Yep.
Kelvin Sampson is named as Coach of the Year. He would have been third on my list.
Mm-hmm. I think that's fair.
I would not have put him first. I would have probably thought that it would be Hurley, Painter, and Sampson.
Yeah.
And I could see Hurley and Painter flip-flop either way, one and two.
I agree.
I didn't expect Sampson to be the Coach of the Year. But I mean, they had a great season, so it's not like, you know, that you can't feel like, okay, Painter and Hurley got snubbed. It just could be one of those awards where you could debate it a little bit, but you can't say the guy didn't deserve it.
No, they did have a great season, the Houston Cougars.
And they'd be playing in I'm convinced they would be playing in this Final Four and would be playing Purdue. And I think if you had Purdue versus Houston, it might be a whole different game and a different outcome for the Boilermakers. We have a lot of confidence with this matchup, but, you know, Houston just has a way of forcing turnovers, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Great defensively. They pressure you. They force you into turnovers. And, you know, that's one of the Achilles heels that pops up every once in a while with the Boilermakers is they can give the ball up and they can turn it over. They've been much better at it this year than when they had freshman guards last year. Lance Jones has helped them with an extra ball handler on the court. But I do think we'd have a whole different game if Houston made it. And if Shedd didn't get hurt, I think Houston would have survived the North Carolina State game. So I think we would have all three teams that we thought were the best all year long make it to the Final Four, except for just an untimely injury when Houston already was dealing with a couple of guys that were out of the lineup because of injuries. So, like I said, it can surprise you. It might not be the way you'd have voted, but it's hard to put up too much of an argument against it because they had a great year.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I think for some Indiana fans, they don't want to admit that Kelvin Sampson is having success elsewhere.
Mm.
You know, he ended up run out of Bloomington because of some infractions. Some people thought they were stupid and major, and anybody that ran the program dirty. Because you remember, at this point, Indiana always prided itself on running a squeaky clean program. And as soon as there was the first whiff of anybody doing anything wrong, the Indiana fan base wanted that coach run out of town. And you know, it wasn't major violations, wasn't like anything that was, you know, big. But in fact, on today's standards, wouldn't have been much at all.
Right.
But the bottom line is it got him rung up in Bloomington and then he's gone to Houston and had great success. And of course he had to depart the NCAA for a couple of years. I think he was an assistant up in Milwaukee, if I'm not mistaken.
Huh.
46862 is Parkview Sports Medicine text line. 46862. Give us your thoughts. Who's going to win? Who's going to score more points? You got to go to Twitter or X and be sure to vote in our poll. Just go to 1380 The Fan, and we've got our poll up running here through the show. Also, a reminder that we'll be stepping aside a bit early because it's opening day for Minor League Baseball. And so the Tin Caps getting set to take on the Great Lakes Loons. Not a duck, not a goose. It's a loon.
It's a loon.
And they will get it going tonight at 6:05, and we will join the pregame with John and Jack coming up at 5:45, as we'll step aside about 5:40 to have time to get it to them for the 5:45 pregame show here with Tin Caps Baseball. Coming up, it was the NIT Championship, and it certainly didn't end the way we were hoping it would. We'll talk about that coming up. Right now, we got to check in on headlines. We got to find out what's happening in the world of sports. Man, oh, man, are we behind already on a Friday, and we've got to leave early.
Lots to talk about.
Give them to us, Adam.
All right. Well, you mentioned it already, but today, Zach Edey did collect his second AP Player of the Year award, becoming the first back-to-back winner since Ralph Sampson won 3 in a row at Virginia. Edey received 57 of 62 votes from journalists who vote in the weekly Top 25. Tennessee's Dalton Knecht received 3 votes, and Houston's Jamal Shebe got 2. Edey heads into Saturday's matchup against NC State, averaging 25 points and 12.2 rebounds and 2.2 blocks per game while shooting 62.2% from the field this season. Some national college news. This was rumored, but now official. USC freshman guard Bronny James will enter the 2024 NBA draft while maintaining his college eligibility and will also enter the transfer portal, he said today on his Instagram.
Now, okay, but this means that he's able to talk to NBA executives, get some feedback, tell dad where he needs to make plans to play. I really don't think that anybody, unless they're in a position where they think this can lock up LeBron.
Right.
Bronny wasn't even a starter at USC.
No.
He's not ready for the NBA. But it's his right to declare and have the freedom to talk to NBA executives, so he's taking advantage of it.
Yep, we'll see what they say. James averaged 4.8 points, 2.8 rebounds, and 2.1 assists in 19 minutes a game. In the aftermath of the cardiac arrest and heart procedure, he will need to be evaluated and approved by the NBA's fitness to play panel before he can become eligible to participate in team workouts or the draft combine. An MLB update here for you this afternoon, Brett. The Cubs lead the Dodgers 6-5 in the bottom of the sixth in Chicago. The Tigers get a 5-4 win over the Athletics. The Rays lead the Rockies 1-0 in the top of the first. And in the bottom of the first, it's a scoreless game between the Orioles and the Pirates. The Padres about to have first pitch against the Giants in about 15 minutes. And that's your top stories.
We're coming back soon with the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Welcome back to the Sports Rush, your daily local sports fix, 4-6. Brett Rump with Adam Lundy, and we've got you on the Parkview Sports Medicine text line at 46862. Your thoughts, your questions, your suggestions, and of course our Twitter poll is up. What do you think is going to happen tonight between Iowa and UConn? And you've got 4 choices. Iowa wins, Caitlin Clark's the top scorer. Iowa wins, but Paige Beckers outscores Caitlin Clark. And then you can pick UConn to win and pick Clark to outscore Beckers, or pick UConn with Beckers outscoring Clark. 4 options. Votes are starting to come in.
Pouring, my friend.
What do we got so far? Who's leading?
Yeah, right now, Iowa winning and Clark leading in scoring is leading in voting at 64%.
There you go. That's the early tally, and you can find it on your Twitter or X account by going to @1380TheFan. Last night, everybody was much anticipating the Jack Golke show because of the three-point contest. That was not a... No.
No, that did not happen.
No, kind of looked like the Golke we saw when we played up there. Jack Golke failed to get out of the first round, but it's Sarah Scalia from Indiana University who ended up winning the three-point contest.
All right.
Beat Tominaga.
What?
In the championship.
No. Tominaga won the matchup between the two.
Oh, yeah, he did. Yeah.
But
she won the women's
championship. She won the women's competition, yeah.
Dad tried to give her the entire title.
No, Tominaga was just too insane.
I'm having a bad day.
You are having a rough day.
That's all right. I got my mind on Final Four, and I can't think of anything else.
Man, did you see Tominaga, though? Man, he was insane.
Yeah, I did. Well, I saw him against the men. I did not see the finish.
The one against Scalia was not
because they kept separating
the highlight.
And stuff.
Right.
It was like and
but Tominaga in the men's competition twice he waited for the buzzer for his last shot and he hit it both times and the first one he did a turnaround and it was his money ball and he did the Steph Curry turnaround after waiting for the buzzer
showing off
and then the second time he was up against Jameson Battle of Ohio State in the second round and he needed the last money ball to win. He waited for the shot clock again, shot it at the buzzer, boom. Takes out Battle by 1 point.
I would have no problem if Pacers drafted Tominaga.
Oh, man, he is a shooter. But the thing is, he's being lauded as the Japanese Steph Curry, and he can light it up from downtown. But he's also a very good cutter and finisher at the rim, shooting almost like 60% near the basket.
I just think that a guy that's got that kind of attitude, it's contagious.
Yeah,
he'll bring a huge amount of attention and fan base. I would have no problem if the Pacers want to add him and take a flyer on him in the draft.
Why not?
Well, I mean, most of the pieces are there for the Pacers. But, and it's not going to be a rookie that's going to change things because the Pacers are going to draft, we assume, outside the lottery.
Right.
And I would have no problem at all. If they take in the lower first round, if they, and they probably could get him dropping down in the first round. I don't know if he's even going to be a first round pick. But just the way the guy shoots, the attitude, he has just a genuine love for the game. And I know he's, at times he gets a little cocky, but I like it. I think it's an arrogance that he backs up, and I have no problem when someone wants to be a little arrogant when they can back it up with their game.
Yeah.
I don't like somebody who's got more arrogance than they've got game,
mm-hmm.
but and he backs it up.
And the thing is, it's not like a jerk arrogance. It's just confidence and a love for the game of basketball.
He's a showman.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, that's really what it is. He's just showing off a little bit for the crowd, just to make it a little more fun, a little more entertaining. 46862, Parkview Sports Medicine text line. Everything was entertaining last night until the last minute. Hinkle Fieldhouse, the NIT championship, Indiana State Sycamores, a 7-point lead, 77-70. The clock goes under 2 minutes. I'm like, oh, just two more minutes till we celebrate.
Oh, when that deep three was hit, coming across the court, pulling up, and just bang to put them up seven, I thought it was over.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the place is going nuts. You feel like, and Seton Hall had made a run after run when it looked like Indiana State was trying to pull away. But in this case, I feel like Indiana State, not just, trying to pull away, they almost pushed back into, in other words, they gave Seton Hall the opportunity, and Seton Hall took advantage of it. I thought the couple of threes that were shot by Avila, I thought were questionable.
I agree.
Early shot clock,
yep.
And I know he's a great shooter and all, but I don't think that was the time or the place. And that's one of those, I always say, if you're going to take the money ball shot, you better make it. And that was one of those that would have been the money ball. It would have been the dagger if he makes it.
Oh, yeah.
But if you don't, you open the door wide open, and you risk yourself to losing the basketball game. And and exactly what, what was the worst-case scenario happened. Seton Hall ends the game on a 9-0 run. And then, final possession.
Oh, no.
2-point game.
Yeah.
No look at all at going for a two. I know that Indiana State is a fantastic three-point shooting team. But you know what they're really fantastic at is their passing and cutting, going to the basket, and their kickouts for three. There, it's not, you know, make a perimeter pass and then try to get space to launch one. That's not their game. And they tried to set it up. And I'm glad Josh Schertz got fired after the game and is going to St. Louis.
Fired.
Yeah. Okay. So he didn't get fired. I'm just kidding.
No, a lot of respect for Schertz. He had a great season. It's just a shame that they
didn't. I mean, we've known all along he's leaving.
Yeah, we knew. It's just a shame that they didn't get the cherry on top of the sundae, per se.
Well, he went for the SportsCenter moment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 2-point game. Let's hit the three. Bring the house down. Watch the confetti fall. Mm. And, you know, I can ride off into the sunset. He went for the storybook ending instead of the safe ending. I think going to overtime would have been fine at that point.
I think so,
You'd
too.
You'd have gotten the timeout to maybe take the momentum away from Seton Hall. You'd been able to regroup. You had the fans on your side. I say, in that situation, I say, take it to the basket, drive, drop it off, play the pick and roll game. You know, the other thing about it is Avila is such a great passer, and he's a dangerous scorer. I'd have probably played the pick-and-roll game, tried to get it to Avila, and if he's covered or if they rotate onto him on that pick-and-roll, he'll kick it out. He'll find the guy that's open. And I think they had time to run that, and they didn't.
No.
And I thought that was a mistake. Now, I'm not trying to pretend to be the coach, but I just thought at that moment, if you get the open two, take the open two. If they take the two away, kick it out, play the three, you know, take your chance on a three. That's why you shoot 40% from out there, because you're an inside-outside type of team, and a lot of the times those three-pointers are paint-touch shots where you get it in the paint, you kick it out. And in this case, they tried to play the perimeter game, never made a pass inside, and ended up kind of, I guess you could wrap up their season by saying they lived and died by the three-pointer.
Yeah, I especially would have liked to maybe see them try to get it inside after the first three was put up, and I don't know if it was deflected or blocked, but then they get the ball back.
Well, he tried to draw the foul.
That, yeah.
And then the ball kind of popped up, and it got free, and then he went back and tried to launch it again.
Right.
But, you know, he could have gone back and gotten it and taken off. But the problem is that trying to force that contact and get a whistle.
That's
okay. The problem at that point is it throws off that guy's clock.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. He
mm-hmm.
now has no concept of how much time is left and where he's at on the court. He just turned to throw a prayer up toward the basket.
Right.
And that's why I think if you set up a play that you know is a 5-6 second play, that, you know, you get it to your point guard, you set up your pick and roll game, and if they rotate over to Avila, then you've got a guy on the perimeter that should be open. And even if you kick it out and you make an extra pass, you probably have time to do that before you have to take three to beat the buzzer. Didn't do it. Took a couple of contested threes, very challenged threes. And I also, you know, I know there may have been a little contact on that three-pointer, but at that point in the game, you can't call the foul if the shooter initiates the contact. Even if the guy's coming into the shooter's space, clearly the shooter leaned forward into him to create contact. I'm like, good no call, can't call that.
Yeah, I agree. And we see that being called the other way in the NBA. If a shooter tries to draw contact, it's often called.
Yeah, yeah. And well, the NBA totally protects the shooter. Everything. I mean, you
true.
Can't get into a space that's a circle under their feet where it could be a landing zone. I mean, they've got all the
right,
rules to
right.
protect. But I do like the idea you can't kick out.
No kicking out. That does get called.
Because that used to be the way a lot of whistles came on three-pointers was, and the NBA seemed to perfect it before college because it is difficult to shoot doing that.
Right.
So I like the fact there's no kick out. But that was clearly, to me, that was almost an example of a kick out. That was, instead of kicking with your leg, you're leaning with your shoulder. It's just a different body part. But you're kind of initiating contact that the defender cannot avoid.
Right.
And it doesn't mean that the defender is fouling you. It just means that you initiated the contact with him. All right, we'll take a break. We're going to come back. Mike Nutter is going to be joining us in our next segment. Also, we've got to talk about the transfer portal and some of the effects the transfer portal has and how it is really the ultimate insurance policy. And I'll tell you what that means. We come back. It's Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. So much buzz about the number of players, way over 1,000, that are in the transfer portal right now. And so many are making mistakes. But it is what it is. If you choose to be a free agent, you risk what's involved with being a free agent. But the transfer portal does offer some insurance. And it's not only insurance for the players, it's insurance for the coaches. And I started to think about the role that the transfer portal is now playing. First of all, if a player in a mid-major ends up performing really well, he's going to get pursued by high majors, and he's got an option then to enter the portal and see what is available from a high major program. Players that end up outside the top six or seven in the rotation at a high major can then find a place maybe to go be a star at a mid-major. And maybe that, you know, what, because you have to remember, the guys that go to the high majors, they were stars in high school. And all of a sudden you go to a program like a Big Ten program or a Big East program after you've been the star. Everybody has always made you the best player on the team, the guy who everybody raves about. And all of a sudden you go to a program where they say you can't play, you're behind this guy and you're behind this guy. And now all of a sudden you're outside the main rotation of the first six or seven players. And that's number one, a psychological shock. But also number two, you've never played the sport of basketball in that position. And this gives you kind of an insurance policy that you have the opportunity to go find a place where you can play. Now, the other factor is there's going to be some dollars involved. You can sit on the bench, make a check that's probably bigger than the check you'll get at the place you're going to play. But it does give players that insurance policy that if things don't work out, I can always transfer and go somewhere where it will work out. And it's a game now that coaches have to play. Mid-major coaches now, when they look at guys that are that borderline guy that might go to a high major, might be a good mid-major talent, in some cases, you've got to concede as a coach and say, hey, you know what? Go to the high major. See how it works. And if you don't make it in that top six, seven, come back and see me. Because if they come to you and they end up being one of your top one or two players, guess where they're heading next? They're heading to the portal to try to go get that shot at the high major then. And so do you want the last 3 years with a really good player after they've not made it in high majors? Or do you want their first year and then watch them use a great freshman season to ride off into a high major program where they're the eighth, ninth, or tenth person on the bench? But the other thing it's an insurance policy for is also coaches don't have to live with their mistakes in recruiting for 4 years. I mean, they can make it very clear to a player. And a lot of those postseason meetings are probably taking place about now or just have taken place, where you tell a person, next year, I'm not sure that you're going to have a lot of extra minutes. And you kind of know what the response is going to be and that players are going to transfer and look for another opportunity. Some of those players at the mid-major level, they end up playing D2 basketball. You know, they can't find another mid-major D1 offer, but you know, and that's what happens. You see this portal and you got thousands of names in it, and there's really not that many spots, because you have to remember the coaches out there are filling spots with incoming freshmen. And so you're taking a gamble. You put your name in the portal. It sounds easy to do, but it doesn't always have the best result. And your career may be pushed back all the way into the D2 level or below if you take that advantage of the transfer portal. But it is an insurance policy. It does give the freedom to the player. It gives the freedom to the coach to maybe make up for a mistake, a guy that they undersigned, oversigned, whatever the case may be. But right now, a lot of teams trying to supplement their needs through the transfer portal. Well, it is time to get this baseball season underway. Tonight, the Tin Caps open it up on the road at Great Lakes. And that means the job just got much busier for our next guest, TinCast President Mike Nutter, joining us. And the day is here, Mike. And I'm just curious, all your years now that you've been in the business, does it feel like it takes forever to get here, or does it come up on you so fast that you almost feel like you're not ready for it?
That's a great question. You know what? It feels like it takes forever to get here when we're in the the January and February. And then, you know, we've got a lot of season prep and stadium prep and stuff, and the Mother Nature hasn't been too kind the last couple weeks. But now it's here, and we wish we had more time after feeling like it was taking way too long to get here.
Well, and as you've grown in your role and built the experience, I'm sure you've also learned how to check things off the must-do list much earlier. So you have to feel more prepared for the season to arrive than maybe you did 20 years ago.
Very well said. And also, you know, there's too many to name, but our very, very veteran staff that has been here for a long time as well, where we just, it doesn't matter where you are or who you are on the org chart. People know what needs to be done, are great with doing it. Team flew in last Saturday night into Indy. They got up here Saturday night. We were walking around with Mike Daly and the coaching staff, and everybody was joking, well, it's 70 degrees. We thought it was going to be cold here. And then they had a full workout on Easter Sunday. We put the tarp on that night, and we've been dancing and dodging the rain, and the tarp literally went on Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. But they got all their workouts and sim games in. The players were really cool to come back to do meet the team that night and sign the autographs. So it's been a great week. These weeks are a grind. Keith Winter and I were talking earlier this morning. In some ways, the last 6 days is harder than a six-game homestand. But we're here now. We're starting on the road tonight at 6. Hopefully we can get a victory there, and then I can turn on the UConn-Iowa women's game that's got the whole country intrigued. My wife and I have been watching most of Caitlin's games this year, and so it's been a lot of fun. I love the roster. I love that Mike is so open-minded, Mike Daly, and a communicator. It's going to be a fun one, I believe.
Well, Mike, you know, I joked with John Nolan yesterday that Mother Nature just wanted to make sure that Keith Winter and the staff got a dress rehearsal on how that field is.
She did her part, Ted.
Yeah, on how that new field is going to handle the water. So, what is the result?
100% no problem handling water. Now, I don't know if it's like this at the station, but here, it is bright and sunny right now. If Keith was on, he would tell us, hey, we just need the sun and Mother Nature to warm up. And it certainly looks like, you know, there's a day next Thursday I think has decent chance of rain. But Tuesday through Sunday, a lot warmer than what the last week or two have been. Most of the days look dry other than Thursday. So he just needs it to warm up a little bit to get the grass growing again. But no standing water on the warning track. The players were telling me the night of meet the team, even guys that were here before, and we have quite a few of those guys, saying we cannot believe how well the new field drains. It's 100% sand base below the grass. So literally, there's none of that clay and muck and anything to have the grass puddle up. And so really, really great returns to start.
You know, I was going to ask you about that and try to get a peek behind the curtain or maybe a peek under the turf. You had a chance to experience that new field going in this winter. And I don't know if it's proprietary information or not, but what's under the grass? What exactly is it that causes that field to drain so well?
So that's a great question. You know, we joke that in here in Northeast Indiana, we can put a shovel in the ground and bend the shovel at a 90-degree angle because of that Indiana clay. This is more like what you're used to down in Florida, where your family lives, where you have a place where it is sand-based. So what does that mean?
It's soft.
We redid the drainage. The whole warning track used to puddle up more than anything. All that drainage through the warning track has been ripped out. The behind-the-curtain thing, people that have been to games here over the years may not realize, but it was built that if we get a pretty good rainstorm, and we get those in the Midwest in the summer, everything that goes into the bowl drains onto the warning track. Well, before, the field was crowned, and so the field ran off from there into the warning track. Well, we had it coming to the warning track from the grass and from the seats, so we put in massive drainage there. Then when we ripped out the old grass that was in here, They redid it all with everything underneath and the irrigation, and we redid all the pumps. But it's 100% sand under the grass. I was just looking at something for our sister team in Chattanooga, Tennessee today. We're building a new stadium there that will open in 2026, AA for the Reds. They're going to go with a 90-10 mix. And what that means is 90% sand and 10% other, you know, dirt, clay, whatever. Ours is 100% sand. So this baby is going to drain as well as any field in the country.
Does it slow the ball down, like on the infield, a bouncer, does, you know, with a soft surface, does it slow it down?
No. I think a little bit right now it would, because the grass just hasn't been getting growing, but it has come up here, and that's a great question. So, yes, in the short term, I believe it could. And then longer term, once it really takes and thickens up, they'll just cut it. I mean, it won't exactly be like the fairway or the greens at Augusta, but, I mean, it will still play very quickly. And so we're excited to see it. You know, the people that weren't out there before, and you were down low and close and on there.
Yeah.
You know, it really had a crown. We never had any injuries with Tatis and Trey Turner and everybody. But if you were a shortstop and there was a pop fly into left center and you had to go out, you know, you probably ran downhill over, you know, 50, 75 feet to go get it. A foot and a half, 2 feet. And so the general manager on the phone loved it, because the dirt is the part that you always worry about the most with rain. You know, is that going to be playable? But it just, under the new things of Major League Baseball, they just want a totally flat surface. We've got one. We're so excited. The players loved it. One of the Morgans that was out here the other day, David or Tyler, said to me, Nutter, man, I can't believe the way, you know, maybe they were looking for a day off and wish it didn't rain as good, or it didn't drain as good. But we had nothing but success the last few days.
Mike Nutter, Tin Caps president, joining us. Tin Caps start on the road tonight. They're at home for the home opener on Tuesday. And I got to change subjects. I sound like such a grass geek here. We got to talk some baseball. The team arrived. You mentioned it. You had a chance to greet the guys. I suppose probably the most common thing you said to welcome them back was, welcome back.
Yeah. You know what? And obviously, like, that shakes differently, right, with different people. Some hoping to be back. Truthfully, maybe some hoping to be playing in San Antonio. I understand that. You know, I got really close the last couple of years with Ethan Routson.
Mm-hmm.
I've gotten close, pretty close, probably the closest guys that I'm with. Lucas Dunn, Colton Bender, Villar. You know, those are great clubhouse guys, and I'm not just saying that. I would guess to a man, each of those four would have loved to have been in San Antonio. But they're pros, and they're excited to be here. You know, speaking of San Antonio, you know, I got a handful of texts from people that were happy, that were pleasantly surprised that Ethan Salas was back with us. I would use both those words to describe my feelings when the roster was finalized. I was told early on from the Padres that it could go either way. I understand that. He's a phenom. He's a young kid. I absolutely love that he's back here. I think that it's age appropriate for this league. I think that also, this is me speaking and not Mike Daly or the Padres, you have two ultimate professionals in Anthony Villar and Colton Bender. Villar defensively is just as good as Ethan. You know, Bender has life perspective and baseball perspective that is important stuff. They've surrounded him with two incredible guys. There's not going to be a problem with, well, there he's catching more than them. Those guys understand the deal. And so he's surrounded by some great guys. Dylan Lesko, I'm sure, is a guy that could have gone either way, the National High School Player of the Year a couple years ago. And we're excited to have him back. Those two guys are roommates. Those two guys are perfect for each other, talking about Lesko and Salas. And I'm really excited to have them both. Nwillian Cedeno, to highlight another kid, he was injured last year, but he looks like a young Jose Ramirez. I'm not talking about putting that kind of pressure on him, but, you know, really, really good young player. And then Griffin Dorschering, I have to mention him because, one, he looks like a Greek god or a WWE heavyweight champion, but he's also just the salt of the earth, a gentle giant kid, and we were excited that he was back with us.
A Midwesterner, and of course, it's exciting, the outfield that is also coming in with Homer Bush Jr. and Tyler Robertson, a guy that we saw that was a real key for the Tin Caps last year in making that run into the playoffs. So a lot of familiar names for Tin Caps fans. Tomorrow, Tin Caps fans get a chance to kind of, as we say, peek behind the curtain. at Parkview Field. What can fans that come out to the open house tomorrow expect, Mike?
Yep, so it's 11 to 1. It's totally free to get in. It's totally free to park. All the concessions are half price. So for us, it's not some money grab. It's just get people out here and start working through the new employees and stuff. They can get in the dugout. I think they can get in the clubhouse or right near the Tin Caps clubhouse tomorrow, up in the suite level, in the 400 club, and on top of the summit, down in the dugout. So they'll get to see a lot of things that they've never seen before and just get out here. There's a fresh coat of paint on a lot of stuff. The field looks amazing. The front entryway has been totally redone. We can't get them up on treetops quite yet because they're still doing all the flooring or the paver system. But absolutely, they can see everything else, and we're excited to have them out tomorrow.
And then the opener is on Tuesday. I assume plenty of tickets still available?
Plenty of tickets still available. No ticket price increases again for this year. And so they start at $7 out in the lawn, and the Tuesday promotions are still back with U.S. Foods for the $2 stuff. So, you know, the forecast right now looks 68 degrees to 70 degrees at first pitch, with a very, very low chance of rain. So I would sign up for that for every April game ever and take our chances.
And, Mike, real quick before I let you go, I know we're running a little bit over, and I apologize for that, but I did want to ask you about hiring for the summer. I know the season's starting, but is it too late to get a job for the summer at Parkview Field?
Thank you for that. It is not. TinCapsJobs.com, still looking for probably 40 to 50, even if they're not back yet. There's a mom or dad listening right now for their college kid. Wherever they are, tincapsjobs.com, fill it out. We would love to have them. Concessions, ushers, ticket office, ticket takers, parking, cleaning crew, there's all kinds of stuff. Thanks for asking that. We could use a few more folks.
Have a great weekend, and thanks for taking some time out. Go Tin Caps.
Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
That is Mike Nutter, Tin Caps president. Tomorrow, 11 to 1 at the ballpark, you get a chance to kind of tour the facility, see the dugouts, get into places you normally can't get into on a game day. That is tomorrow from 11 to 1. It's a free event, half price concessions, and as he said, even free parking. We'll take a timeout. Another big hour coming up. We'll talk more about the Boilermakers in their Final Four, and Greg Rakestraw joins us about 15 minutes down the pipeline. This is the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM.